go to thecognitiverampage.com. Feel free to contribute, donate, keep fueling the change, whatever it is that you guys can do to help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support and, of course, your contributions. Love you.
The Cognitive Rampage, a scientific approach to self-discovery, change, and life optimization, is now available on Amazon. What I do in the book is I fuse the latest research from the cognitive, behavioral, social, environmental, and biological sciences. It's not just motivational fluff and wordplay. Now, I do talk about my own story, so there's some kind of inspiration in there, but I'm not just spinning words and hyping you up with motivational fluff. Whether you need a life change, simply enjoy self-exploration and optimization, want to discover new hidden passions, or reduce the life-altering effects of toil, anxiety, depression, all of those issues, this book is for you. This book is not a cookie-cutter method of steps to follow. You'll customize the scientific framework with your own personal beliefs to build your authentic change. That way you assimilate it faster and quicker. It's not just copying my beliefs and telling you step one, step two. These will come from your beliefs as how you extend and build the foundation upon this framework. You'll use this framework throughout your whole life, through every change, and through every age. These are not empty words of motivational spin. This book is an experience. The Cognitive Rampage is based in science and is built from your beliefs. It's a path to help you unleash your desired change. You can apply this method on your own with no harmful side effects.
Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Now we're live. So I know you're probably used to back when it was episode 66 you did when we were terribly connected with technology. And I always would open with the whole intro thing and da da da. It got so awkward. So now we just go live and I'll go and do a post intro after the show is over. So I like the regular conversation. That's why I held out too, right? Before at least I introduced you two. Okay. But I held out going, well, just wait, we'll go live. Because I haven't talked to you in a while. I just see you on social media and following you. I get updates through Andrew too. And it's hard not to watch all the cool shit you do on Instagram and everywhere else. So how you been, Jill? We got a lot of updating to do and catching up to do.
Yeah, last time we spoke, I was in Nepal. I remember exactly. I was in one of my favorite hotels in the world in Kathmandu, and super special place. I don't remember if our connection was bad. I don't really recall.
Yeah, it was, we were coming in and out. So you were going off, and what ended up working well is on the back end of it, you could hear you fine. And so it was just when we were going live, what I was hearing. So all your show comes in good with you speaking, but only when I interrupt and talk does it cut, it cuts up. But when I was listening to you, all I would get were words in the middle. I get inspiration, lots of people helping, and it's been great. And then I would miss all the middle stuff, and you'd be on this long cognitive rampage, if you will. And then you'd finish, and I'd go, well, I can't say shit to any of that. And yours came out good on the back end. But yeah, so now you're loud and clear, which is, it's good.
That's great. Yeah. Well, that trip, yeah, it's great that we're talking because we embarked on that journey exactly 2 years ago, a couple of days ago. So this week, 2 years ago, and it was, it doesn't seem possible that it could be 2 years. It does, I mean, it's just been a flash. And I have been writing and I still haven't published anything. There's still just an infusion and an integration of life lessons and the journey still percolating through my daily life. So it's been an interesting year. I've been back a year, but it still seems like 10 minutes. I still have, I've traveled a lot. I think you see that. I do travel a lot. And I was just in Europe for 6 weeks.
Yeah, I was trying to, I'm honestly trying to, you know, one of my superpowers is to feel empathy. And as you were talking there, I just couldn't, I didn't have empathy that, because you had traveled everywhere. And I'm like, well, shitty for you. You're shitty for you, Jill. I'm sorry, you know.
Well, there are some downsides to it. And
You know what? That's what I actually would like to hear, right? Because, you know, I've done a little traveling here and there, but nothing like the global tramp that you are. So what's that like? I mean, what are some of the bad parts, right? We there's enough travel bloggers, right? I feel like I can travel anywhere in the world through Instagram, right? But what's the like we were talking on the podcast with Chris, right, about what the real story is like behind trying to run a podcast and how much work and you know, goes behind it. What's the travel life really like on that side?
Well, that's a great question. And I am fortunate to have a community of travelers as well. So a lot of what I'll share with you is my own personal experiences, but as well as insights I've gained from other people in the world of vagabonding, so to say.
Great book, by the way.
Yeah, what's that?
That's a great book, by the way.
Yeah. So, you know, I have to say, for our family trip, which was incredibly inspiring and wonderful, there weren't a lot of negatives. We were really lucky. We talk about that. When we embarked, I said to my husband the other day, I was like, dude, we left 2 years ago today. That was just 3 days ago. And he said, that was scary. And I said, what? I was so surprised because he's not afraid of much. I said, really? Like, what was scary? And he's like, well, we had no idea what the shit we were doing. We had no idea what we were doing.
What was the itinerary like? Before you get into the other part, the other question, you know what I mean? Because people listening, if they haven't listened to the first episode with you, right, they don't really give the extent of how and how it's actually a tribe traveling, et cetera.
It is. And there's a skill, there's an art, and there is a method to a world trip. And intentionally, when we left, I knew I wanted it to be a continuous journey around the world. So that was our format. Some people travel and they go back and forth. You know, they'll do like a few countries or they'll stay somewhere and they might come back home. I knew, and part of it is a sacrifice. So when I say it's a challenge, there are things you're always going to quote unquote miss or make choice about. So I knew going in, I was missing my partner. She's somebody that started as a volunteer for me almost 5 years ago. She's now the executive director of the nonprofit I started. She's worked with me for 4.5 years. I knew I was missing her wedding. I knew I was missing Christmas with my family for the first time in 40 years. You know, there were things going into it that we chose to go around the world without stop. So with that, there are ways to do it. And I talk to people. I could have a separate business just consulting on world travel because there really is a science. In fact, I spoke to a woman last weekend who's going to embark on a trip and she had a lot of these questions. Some people do a round the world ticket. We did not want to do that because we wanted the flexibility of adding or changing countries. Yeah. So the biggest thing I say to people is have an anchor. And I had two anchors. We sat down as a family. There are four of us, so it's not all about me. Although I definitely had some strong opinions of where I absolutely wanted to go. So I created this conversation with our family. What are your non-negotiables? Right? And when you start a relationship like you two, you have to talk about your non-negotiables. What are your non-negotiables?
Oh, that's so key because that's really what it comes down to in the length of the relationship. And so many people skip right over it, right? Because you just say, here's all the positives. We lean on that, right? Instead of leaning toward the hard conversations, right? You don't want to mess up whatever the beginning is or so you don't have the chat. But when that's important, right? Is going, look, if this line's crossed, this isn't negotiable, this doesn't change, right? If we're good here, then we can, you know, move forward.
Absolutely. And so I had my heart set on Bhutan and Madagascar. Like, couldn't be like more different. You know, they were kind of, no, they seemed like they were in some part of the near part of the world together. Not at all. Two extremely difficult countries to get to with very unique challenges, of course, to travel in and unique. And most people haven't ever been there. So, of course, that appealed to me. And then, you know, our daughters had a couple places, although they were a little bit more open. And my husband was actually very open. He didn't have any non-negotiables. I also added Tokyo to that because I'm in the middle of doing the 6 world major marathons. So we kept.
Yeah. Well, all right. So we're running marathons, opening nonprofits, have the institution. I already know about the documentary. You're traveling through it. We have non-negotiables and I'm going to take my two beautiful daughters and my husband and we know nothing. And we're going to travel around the world for 2 years.
Yes.
That's okay.
I did. I have to say, I listened to a little bit of the podcast, and I did hear though in her voice the instant, "Oh, America!" You know, I could hear that. That just that, you know, when you haven't seen someone for a long time, that instant hug when you hear their voice.
Yeah, because
hear that. That's yeah,
we
be hard.
Yeah, you know, we were just listening to your old episode, and you hadn't spoken to an American. I think it had been a long time, and so the first one was myself on the podcast.
Yeah,
that's what she was referencing. Is you could hear it though when you were. You did seem like you really missed kind of being home.
I've had that voice myself before, and I was listening to her, and I was like, oh, she misses home. That was going to be my question to you, actually, is when you feel that way, where do you feel is really home?
Well, that's a good question.
You've gotten 5 questions now and not the ability to answer any of them. Okay.
Well, no, actually, it's so great that you took me back to that place, because we were in Nepal and then we were heading to India. And then we went from India to United Arab Emirates. In India and United Arab Emirates were total add-ons. I mean, you think of it, people spend, you know, years desiring to go to these places, and we're like, oh yeah, let's add India. Oh, we didn't think we'd add India.
There, might as well stop by.
Might as well go by. And India, after India, I was like, Lord, I really wanted a taste of America. And then we went to United Arab Emirates. So we're talking Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Could not be more different from India. I mean, with the opulence and the shopping and the malls. I went to Lululemon, which is, I've been an ambassador for years. And that's when I got that, right after I spoke to you. So it was probably about 2 weeks after I spoke with you that I got that little infusion. And that was the closest of all the way in the world. That's the closest I felt to home. Mm-hmm. Because even though it's an Arab nation, in a way, and very unique in their dress and their attire, the consumerism and the capitalism was alive and well. So we got the little taste test there for the States. And then we went to Madagascar, which was as remote as you can imagine and the most difficult place to get to. And once there, even more remote. And that
what's the difficulty? Are we taking horseback places? You got to swim across a river.
So I'll tell you, we were talking about the challenges and of travel and the planning, and the beauty of what we did is we hired a guy. I call him my guy. We hired a guy.
I got a guy.
We had a guy. He was our guy. He's part fixer, part travel agent, part friend. Like, he was just this guy that we could call and change.
Part-time MI6.
He's her. You got it.
Whatever you need, Jill will be at the airport waiting for you.
He could not get us out of Madagascar. We got stuck in Madagascar. And that was sort of my biggest fear, was like, oh, not only the inconvenience of it, but like, really, I don't want to be stuck here. I was done. Once we were done with Madagascar, we were done. And they took our bags off the flight. They're like, nope, you're not leaving. And it was really crazy. So the challenge with Madagascar, and like I said, I was running the world while I was traveling. And it was, there were a couple places I really couldn't run or shouldn't have run. And Madagascar was one of them in the city area. And we had another fixer there, a friend of a friend who owns a mine. He owns a gem mine, big time gem mine. He's from the U.S., so he hooked us up with one of his people, which is really the only way to do it with children. And this guy, a friend of mine, has been going to Madagascar for 11 years, and he wouldn't even bring his kids there. And he said, I really don't recommend it. I really wouldn't. I wouldn't bring my daughters. I don't, you know, I'm just telling you how it is. And yet I still had this pull because there's really good kite surfing there. So, We met some families on this forum, and I just decided I want to go. I still wanted to go. And we went. So he arranged for us to have his fixer, his friend, pick us up. And he said, don't run here. It's the only time I was told, do not run. And so when I say it's challenging, you take a flight to this really remote part of the country. So they do have flights, but they're not reliable. You cannot rely on these flights actually happening. So maybe they'll go, maybe they won't. Maybe they'll be stuck there for a day or two or three, maybe not. And so we got there and we were in this very remote. And that's, yes, that's when you take this boat. It's like long boat. There are no cars to get to where we were. And you just show up. It's a wet landing and it was epic kite surfing and beautiful and remote and wild.
Well worth it.
Really well worth it. In fact, that's really one of my daughter's favorite places. And it was a challenge. Nobody speaks English. One guy did speak English there. I speak some French. So we got ourselves along fine. But I mean, we're talking like major critters, you know, big, crazy bugs, not like Florida bugs. I've lived in Florida for 9 years and I grew up there. So it was wild and beautiful. And
when you say you're moving around the world, right? You're not staying. You're kind of going. What kind of time frame? How long did you stay in Madagascar? And did you kind of keep that same structure as you moved on?
No, that's a great question. And I think that's part of the beauty of people do it in different ways. And we were quite flexible. There were some places because I had that anchor of that Tokyo Marathon. It had to have us in certain places up till that marathon. In a region. So we.
So the race structures then on each continent that you were going to, each country you're going to kind of set the pace of where you were going.
Yeah, there was that. Now, I only did two marathons because I'm doing the 6 world majors, but I didn't do them in that whole calendar year. I only did Tokyo and then another one in South Africa. I was supposed to do one in Bhutan, but I ended up getting the stomach flu. And that's another thing. So the girls were homeschooling, which you already knew that. We talked about that, which was hell. So that determined some places where we'd stay. Sometimes we would be like, okay, we're near a city. We're going to end up just being here for 3 days straight and literally barely leave the hotel because we could get Wi-Fi to catch up. So we would do, you know, a month of schoolwork within a 6-day period or something like that. Hmm. So there were places that we just wanted to check out, like Vietnam wasn't also on our plan and we ended up going, but we just tagged that on for 8 days and we did Madagascar for, I think, 9 or 10, which was enough. I mean, it's obviously we didn't see everything, but some places we were in Southeast Asia for 6 weeks. We were in Indonesia way longer than we really wanted to be.
Did you get stuck there? Harder to get out again? I mean,
you know, that was probably one of the more disappointing places, and for many reasons. We had just gotten wrong information, basically. Like, oh, you've got to go. It's so great. It's so amazing. And so we thought, well, this will be a good place to just settle down and get a bunch of schoolwork done with the kids. And it turned out there was next to no Wi-Fi on these islands. We were on these Gili Islands. And so we were in Indonesia, I think a total of 5 weeks. And some people just love it. They love it. It's like their goal is to go to Bali or go to Ubud and Gili. I'm glad, but
those are the Instagram travelers, right? You get that cool picture of that one place. You're like, I always want to go there.
They walk out there for like 5 minutes, take the picture and then last back in.
And go back.
Yeah, you know, and there's some beautiful places and people. It's just, it's not like the Instagram photos. I mean, the rice fields and the rice paddies are amazing. The Gili Islands for maybe 1 or 2 days, not 12, would have been fine. I did end up getting certified in free diving, which was pretty epic and amazing. And I dove more than, I don't know, 60 feet, you know, free.
Nice.
Free breathing, deep dive, rescue people from down at 60 feet plus.
That
was cool.
I love all that. I got, you know, before you jump past, you were talking about a place that had basically no EMF, right? No Wi-Fi, et cetera. In the different places you traveled, did you notice, it's kind of an open-ended question, right? I'll just leave it open to you. Kind of a difference in like a physical health, a mental health of like the community or the individuals you met, where, you know, did you hear people in certain places not or talking more about depression, anxiety, or where you didn't hear any of that at all? Can kind of compare, if you will, kind of all the different cultures you saw, but kind of walk that mental health and physical health line.
That's a great question. You know, and I do look at cultures from a wellness perspective. I would say, the more connected people are to nature and outdoor oriented cultures, yes, there's more of a community support network, general joy, well-being. And I would be more in rural, I would say rural places. In a lot of cities, of course, there's a very similar trend of hustle, bustle, walk past, not a whole lot of eye contact. In general, people in New Zealand, everywhere we went, were just great.
I think in New Zealand, that was actually the way that I felt. Like, everybody was very, very kind, and it's just like I didn't feel like I was imposing when I asked questions. It was very, they were all like very welcoming.
Yeah, a general overarching community oriented support system, joy, ease. I would say, so, okay, you know, I work a lot with women and girls, and so I'm always looking at that.
Yeah.
I think it's a little it's a tough question for me to answer without.
You generalize, for sure. It's a generalizing question, but and it's also based on, 15 days of observation of being in the country. But still, that first takeaway, but I do like the focus you're headed, though. It's like on girls. That's what you're focusing. That's kind of what you're looking at. That's who you develop, et cetera.
So for me, if I look at it through there, no, I saw a lot of sad girls who are quieted in a lot of the, some of the countries I went to, specifically Indonesia, Nepal, India, not a lot of smiling, enjoy, hardship, pain, perhaps even anger. And yet, I tend to see the individual. When the girls and I were living, when we were in Gili Islands, there was a young boy, and he lived in a cardboard shack with his father. And he became like my third kid. He was over at our little place that we rented every day. I would go out snorkeling, and 5 minutes later, he'd be like swimming after me, and he just followed me everywhere. And his dad was just, he didn't even have a mom, which was unusual. His mother was actually from the islands, I think Aruba or something. Maybe she was Dutch, and she left. She never was a part of his life. Mm. And he just had this very simple, complete, absolute joy and gratitude for his life. I mean, they didn't have any electricity, no toilets, no running water, nothing. And so there's a simple, he didn't have anything to compare hardship to. Like, he just had a really simple, happy way of being. And so I saw there were individuals more so than a whole culture. But like Dubai, I couldn't even wrap my brain around that one, or the United States.
Let's try. Let's try.
How was it? Was it way too city-like?
It was. I do have to say, actually, one thing I loved about it was the safest I felt running. I had a long couple runs there. And even though it was city, it was clean. I didn't get followed by anybody.
Just by the cameras.
Well, from what you know.
Yeah, maybe. That's true.
Yeah, it's not the early 90s anymore. They don't have to walk around behind you and have the guy trotting around two corners around.
No, but I mean, I was followed, like in India when I went out running, I was followed by a pack of guys.
What the fuck?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would have never, if I knew that now, I would have never gone out on that run, but I had to finish it. Like, I was already out there. There was no going back. But women just didn't run. And we were not in a tourist area. I was with my friend who is from India. So we went to some very remote places where, we did not see other tourists or visitors.
Well, that's another point about travel, right? People look at it as this big glamorous thing, going to those islands and places you named before, and they don't realize how dangerous actually it can actually be traveling like that.
Yeah, and people were great in general, and what I had to worry about more running around the world was dogs chasing me than than people. But
so, you know, does your perspective change on dogs now?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, so I run for freedom. Like, I am a sex assault survivor when I was 15. So I didn't ever run in cities or like go off on my own. I grew up with like the Central Park jogger fear, like, because I'm from Connecticut. So I was like, ah, that's what happens to women who run, you know, and that was tied into my psyche around having been assaulted. So this was huge for me.
You didn't say that shit on the last podcast. Now I'm tying in the metaphoric and the literal symbolism from why you choose running to run around the world. And so, okay. You were holding out on that first podcast. You left that out. And it's starting to come together now.
Well, that is why this was a freedom journey for me personally, because I did learn, you know, for instance, going back to the question about general people's mental health, French Polynesia is beautiful. And we went to 5 islands there, and I ran on all 5 islands. And there is just a real simple beauty. And the same in Bhutan, very similar, idyllic view from the outside looking in. But you know, I can't go to a place and not think of generations of historic genocide or oppression of a people or the culture, so to say. So that is present in French Polynesia. So I don't want to be naive to say, oh, it's so beautiful. It's this, you know, island nation. And oh gosh, you gotta go. It's just gorgeous. Yes, it is all that. But there's this other side of like the real roots of the Polynesian culture. If you start to read into it, that that was really stymied, you know, and really repressed from full expression. It's coming out again, and there's more authentic expression of the culture, of the island culture, the original island culture and traditions. But, you know, that was removed systematically when the French came in. So I can't, and I know I bug some of my friends when I travel with them, because I see beyond and I get a download. I love having this conversation. I had a conversation with a friend the other day, and she didn't understand. We stayed at a place this summer in Austria, and I don't know if she understood, but I said, I have a bad feeling. I had nightmares all night about the Nazi occupation in this place that we stayed in. And yeah. I couldn't sleep. It was getting flooded with the cultural unconscious, and I could not sleep, and I had anxiety, and there's something about this family here that had a role in it, and I don't know what it is, but I have it. So that's what I get when I travel, and it's a little deep, and it's a little crazy, but it's true. So running through these places, I would get these downloads, and I would just have to trust them, like I'm safe, it's all good. When I was in French Polynesia, I was running through crazy island little, you know, we would say almost like a commune, but they're little local villages, you know? And sometimes people would come out and they're like, you know, who is this howly woman? Like, who does this? Like, people don't just run, you know, at 5, 6, and it's humid as hell and it's hot. So I'm running it, you know, in the dark. I'm starting at 4 or 5 in the morning.
How many miles did you end up running?
Oh, it varied. I think I started when I was in on the islands there, maybe 8 to 10 miles, all the way up to 18.
No, I mean total. When you finish how many miles did you end up?
I should have logged that.
What? Oh no!
You didn't log how many actual miles you ran around the world?
No, you know why? I kind of like took a vacation. I worked. I was working so hard.
You're like, I'm not doing fucking numbers at all. I'm doing 26.
But you know what's funny that you asked that? Because the first maybe 3 marathons I did, I logged every hour. I was anal about it, right?
Yeah.
And I knew every time. I knew every time. Not just the hours, but how fast I did every
time. Did you start to become that woman that when she's jogging behind you that yells, to the right, to the right.
To the right, to the right.
Remember that movie? Did you ever see the movie Spanglish? If you have, okay, the runner, what's her name? She's the.
You're talking chick flick. I'm way out. Yeah. I'm way out. I'm not even in on this conversation.
Basically, she's obsessed. This female is obsessed with running to where she's kind of just like forgetting about anything else. And she's running down the street going, to the right, just kind of disregarding.
Telling everybody to move out.
Get out of my way.
Exactly.
So I think it sounded like is you just loosened up. You finally just said, wait, I'm still doing basically a running budget and I'm out here just trying to see the world. So you just kind of let go of it.
I hardly used my watch, which I used to be extremely attached to and anal about. I had some dodgy moments, like besides being chased by dogs, you know, that you've got to reach down like you're going to throw rocks. You have to do it. You have to do it.
Okay. So are you verifying that the defense against a rabid dog chasing you is to turn around and fake a rock throw?
Yes, you have to.
Okay. I have the same response when they say, stand up and say, go bear, go bear.
I've done that to mountain lions too in the wild. Let me tell you, that was probably the best advice I got. The best travel advice I got before I left was, if you're being chased by a dog, you need to reach down. And it has to be fast. It's got to be that like jerky moment, movement. And there were a couple of times where I actually grabbed rocks because these dogs were not backing off. And when they pack, that's the worst. And they packed in Indonesia a couple of times. They were really, really protective. And then one time my closest scare was in French Polynesia. And thankfully a man came out and finally got his dog because that dog was coming after me.
Oh, shit.
I actually had to do that move that she's talking about, the Akasha.
the fake
with the coyotes. One time when I was hiking the mountain, there was two coming down and it was like right when you see them, I did that jerk, you know, like where you're like gonna grab something and then they bolt away like you're gonna.
Yeah, but the coyotes are so smart too. And you know, dogs are wolves too, right? So all they are is, you know, just a little bit smaller wolves. And when they start packing up, whether it's coyotes or dogs in Indonesia, I'm getting a little nervous. I think we got like a new conspiracy theory, the end of the world, that man's best friend actually destroys him.
Okay, that's so funny. But you know what's so interesting is really the ones that went after me the most were connected to a property. The stray dogs, we're just, they're like, dude, they've been beat down so many times or neglected. There were a couple countries, you know what? I became almost like a canineological, not a sociological study, but a canineological study, because I'm like, oh, the animals in Bhutan are so peaceful. Well, look, it's a Buddhist nation and Bhutan is just, I mean, it is beyond peaceful, gorgeous, and
you just
amazing.
Got real peaceful talking about it.
I loved it. And that was a heartbreak for me because I was 6 days after the Tokyo Marathon. I was really feeling great, but I've never been able to run a marathon within a week of another. And I felt great. And I got the stomach flu, so I wasn't able to run it. And so I did another one later, which was fine in South Africa.
You know, most people are like, I'm going to run a marathon once in my life. She's like, I'm pissed I didn't get to run the one right after the other one.
Oh, I know. I'm going to do London. So that's my fifth of the world majors. I'm doing London in April. And I'm super excited about that. And I always felt like I would do Paris and London in the same week. I haven't looked at when Paris is, but
you got to go back and track the mileage. You got to, and at least add up the marathons.
And the world trip, you mean?
Yeah, on the whole world. And as you keep going, I mean, keep the ticker going. And, you know, it's a lot of steps there's so much built into why you do it. You know, for almost kind of a middle finger going, I'm safe. You're not going to make me stay inside and suffer from the trauma I experienced as a kid.
Yeah, but I think that she was trying to do it to where there's no tracking, where it's totally free, where there's no limits. Right? Or Jill, am I off?
Yeah, it was the first time in my life I went on the feeling state of running as opposed to the end goal, the end game. Which, you know, what I love about your book, I've been reading it, and I it's something that you said about creating. I wrote it down because I loved it, and I I say the same thing. People say, oh, you don't find inspiration. You create experiences and you don't wait for them, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To create experiences and not wait for them. I love that. And I use that a lot. I mean, I say that to people all the time, especially as a yoga teacher. You'll hear when I go to other yoga teacher yoga classes and I hear them, find your breath or find your feet or find your inspiration. Or my therapy clients are always like, I want to, you know, find my passion or I want to find my love. And I'm like, fuck that, dude. Like, create it. You are in the driver's seat. What are you finding out there? Like,
you know, I have to admit, I did do yoga for a while, and I was actually, I would be in cradle position or whatever, and I was craving for the instructor just to come and touch my back. You know, when they, you know, they pick like two, maybe three people in the class to come over and they push your back. That's what I was craving.
Yeah. Yeah, I love assist. It's the best. But feeling, instead of, it's really being in action, and I think you get this, is instead of finding or waiting for it or discovering it, it's like feel your feet, feel your breath, create, express now what you want.
Yeah, the that stems off another cliche that people say is about finding yourself. And probably in that same chapter I talk about, go find the nearest mirror. There you are. Now that you found yourself, per se, let's do some shit, right? Yeah. Let's move. And so we do wait for experiences. You know, we sit back and, well, that's, I talked about the internal and the external locus of control in the last podcast, about whether we're destiny. We think we're predestined in what we're doing. The exterior controls what we're able to do, or if internally we go create those experiences. And I mean, the best experiences for me have been that first one, that second one, right? When you don't know anything about it, right? When you're like, oh shit, I don't know what I'm doing here. You know, I'm just getting on, and I don't know, made and feel it's okay to be dumb or not good at something, right? And start something. And those are experiences. That's how you go create them. I did take issue a lot with the people talking about finding purpose and finding passion, as if it's fucking hiding from you. Like you said, as if it's not a hide and seek game here, nor will you ever prove it. You can't prove this is your passion, purpose, etc. There's no light that goes on, right? You just find things, you create those experiences.
That's kind of where I was going with that, which was I was not able to find what they were like implying for me to find, to where I would just be distracted. Instead, I would just be going, maybe they could just rub my back. You know what I mean? I couldn't find what they were looking for, or, you know, for me to center, or, you know what I mean?
Like, maybe if they come spot you, you'll be able to have the right position, right? That'll give you the ohms enough that align you to find the magical
find
place.
That. Yeah. I was like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with yoga too.
That
does make sense. Where is if it's too out there, like, people literally say, I was just in a yoga class today, so I know, people will say, find your feet. It's like, what? Like, no, feel your feet. Press them into the floor or the mat. Root down through the toe ball mound, the outer pinky toe, your heel. So, right, you're creating a physical connection that becomes the foundation for that discovery. I still think that there's a blend, you know, as a psychotherapist, as a group facilitator, there's a blend of creating and then being in flow or in partnership, you know, partnership in this conversation. We're co-creating this. I'm not just waiting for you to do everything and you're not waiting for me to do everything. We're in creation. So part of it is allowing things to unfold. And for this journey, this trip, it was a really beautiful experiment. And when you're having an experiment, there's nothing wrong. And I think if people lived that way more, they're like, hey, this is an experiment. It doesn't have to come out a specific way. People will be more open to trying new things because there's not an end all be all or a pass fail.
Yeah, we have to, I like that, because we have to, so many, we're enforced to create this image of what we've made, what we've become, especially parents too. I talk a lot about it too, that we're, you don't have to act like you got it all fucking together. You don't have to put on the show in front of them that you've got to figure it out. Matter of fact, your kid will probably respect you more if you're going, hey, man, I'm going through some shit this week. You know, that they can relate to them. We're actually training them. But I think society, ego, right, trying to make up for things, we do try to put out there a lot that I know what I'm doing, right? I know where I'm going. I got this figured out, you know. I think there's some quote that says the one that definitely doesn't know have it figured out, thinks they have it figured out. Oh, that's a physics thing. Yeah. One who thinks they understand physics definitely doesn't understand physics. same idea. You know, if you think you got this life figured out in some perfect, you know, way, then I think you're fronting. And you're right, though, Jill. People could admit that and go like, hey, I'm just doing this for now, right? I'm trying this right now, or I'm doing it. Doesn't define you anyway, right? What we do or what we wear or say, right, doesn't define us. I definitely love the, how do people get through that, right? How does somebody get through that, call it a social construct, call it a personal construct, right? How does someone get through that facade that they build up, that they have to act like they got it under control or know exactly what they're doing?
It's a great question. And I think you already get it in that you do this work is, we talk about training, say we'll talk about this marathon thing, training for an event, training for a running event, you know, doing yoga. It's a practice, right? Training is a practice to get to the next level. Getting a master's degree in psychology, which we both have, that's something that we trained for, we practiced. And that's something that I also love that you bring up in your book is, you talk about not just studying, like there is self-study for sure. Yes, there's self-analysis, there's self-discovery. But the part that I love that you get that is more probably connected to the cognitive as well is we're in psychological training always. And when we're in training, we don't have to be perfect. Again, going back to that experiment. So it's working with that, the fulcrum of humility and accountability. Humility and accountability in all of our relationships. So if it's with parenting, for instance, which was at once very exciting when we were on our trip, and that it sometimes like pure hell because there was no escape. And I wrote it, actually just shared again my blog, one of the most important blogs that I wrote. I'll share it in the Facebook group, your Facebook group, but how family travel transformed me, because I had a lot of outs when I lived in Florida and I was practicing. I didn't even see my family on Wednesdays. Literally, I left the house at 6. I didn't come home till 9 at night, seeing clients, yoga, practice, everything. That I was really intentionally put myself in the practice of parenting, and yet also taking accountability for the fact that I didn't know what the shit I was doing. And I'm a psychotherapist. I used to teach parenting classes. I was like the best parenting educator, you know, in my practice before. I was awesome before I had kids. I was really good at teaching people how to
parent. Well, my mentor that lived down there in Naples, Leo D'Annibal, as he said, I say it still many times, is with all things cool, calm, and benign, I'll solve anyone's problem unless it's mine.
Yeah, right. I love that. Say that again.
He said it's... with everything cool, calm, and benign, I'll solve anyone's problem unless it's mine.
Right.
Yeah, he'd hit me with that because I would have an issue in my personal life, and then I know I'm killing as a therapist in there, and then I'm walking out and going, I can't figure this shit out. And he'd look back. He was always so calm, and he'd look back, and he'd tell me that little rhyme, and I'd go, fuck. And he'd say, now, how about that? And I'd just have to walk out, you know, because it's true. And, you know, his measure, Jill, for me, it's so scientific. It's really not, but it made sense to me, right? Is, you know, if you're the person that everyone calls, right, it's we're less emotional. He would say it's 70% wisdom, 30% give or take emotional when a friend is coming to you with what to do. When it's ourselves, that flips. We become 70% emotional, 30% mm-hmm. intelligent, and then we don't know what to do. And then he would say the mantra to me again.
Love it. Yeah, I love that. But again, it's that accountability and willingness to be humble in the face of, I don't want to say mistakes, but being out of integrity, for instance, knowing that your best self didn't come out in a conversation or if it has to do with parenting. Last year was a difficult transition. We left Florida. We moved back to Boulder, Colorado. Our kids were starting over. They were starting over in many ways, obviously, as young girls, and one going into fourth grade, one going into sixth grade. They'd never been to public school before. They'd only ever been to very small private schools in Florida. So different culture. We had just traveled the world. Their study habits and structure was obviously off. And then, you know, being in partnership too, like I was, it was tough. And even coming back from the summer, we were gone for 8 weeks.
Was there a difference? Say when they test in, right? I'm going to guess they were way beyond whatever grade they're tested in personally. But like that difference, I would like to say that I don't think they couldn't get it. I just think they weren't poorly structured. I think they were properly structured, trying to think and be creative on their own and learn along their own. And I mean, maybe as a little kid traveling like that, you'd be scared of a bunch of places. But was public school scarier than Madagascar? Right. To the little
that's
ones?
Such a good point. You know what? That's a really good point. And the truth is, I wish in some ways, this is going to sound totally whacked and maybe a little warped, I wish they were a little bit more scared by the world. Mm-hmm. They are like wild-eyed open. They are not afraid. I mean, they're like, Abdullah's so lucky. He gets to do whatever he wants. I mean, I'm like, is this seriously backfiring on me? They think the little boy who lives in a cardboard shack surrounded by garbage with like a dirt floor, and he literally like gets food maybe like when somebody wants to give him food. And you know, he's sitting there, little boy's reading his Quran, like his dad's nowhere to be seen, and he's like reading his little Quran on his own on his little milk crate, you know, on the floor with his trash, you know, desk that he made. But that's, my kids are like, he's so lucky, he gets to do whatever he wants. I'm like, really? Like, they're, you know, they truly just think he's lucky because he's free.
Well, that's kind of counter to what you hear a lot of people say, right? Is let your kids travel and see how good they really have it, right? And see the world, and they'll see that and come back and appreciate it here much more. That's kind of the exact opposite.
Yeah. And then they're, you know, we're in Nepal and it's like freezing out, you know, we're in the mountains and we've been trekking for days. And yes, they trekked for days. They trekked for more than 10 days and we're out. And there are these kids, and I don't know if you've ever been in Nepal, but every little kid there just has, you know, rosy red chafed cheeks from the cold air and runny noses, you know, mixed with dirt. And I think most of the kids that we encountered, if not all, had never, ever, ever had a shower in their life. And I'm not exaggerating. They would just get bathed down with like a towel or like in the water that comes out of the little faucet in the ground, cold water. But so my kids are like, you know, we get to this place, they're not speaking the same language, and they're running around with like a wheelbarrow, and that's their chariot, and they're having a blast with these kids. So yeah, they are not afraid of different, they're not afraid of dirty, they're not afraid of chaos. I wish they were a little bit, I mean, there were times where I just had to be like, dudes, stop going to the fucking bathroom in India. Like, there's a lot of girl crime, there's a lot of women and girl crime in India, as you know. And, you know, we were with our Indian friend, and that was the only reason we went to India. It's a really good friend of ours from Dubai is like, oh, this guy, you've got to go. He started this really cool company called Moto Monks. It's open heart, open mind, open road. And they do these really soulful motorcycle tours through the Himalayas, through the Indian Himalayas. So we hooked up with JP. And, you know, this guy was like, no, you are family. I'm not taking your money. And he took us all over India, like not tourist India, all over really back roads, really cool India. And so we'd be going to these little dhabas on the side of the road, not, you know, really probably where we should have been eating. And ironically, India is one of the few places I didn't get gut sick. And I ate, you know, off the street the whole time, like this side where the dhabas they're called.
Okay. But yeah. For a minute, I was like eating off the street and my God.
Yeah, it was, but you go to these bathrooms and the girls, I would forget, you know, because you just get so used to, we were having such good luck and such safety that if they were to go to I started to have to go to the bathroom first and figure out where it is, because most of the bathrooms, men and women go in the same area, and they could have easily just been taken out of the back side of so many of these Dabas, never to be seen again. So, and they're so comfortable and they feel safe in the world that I really had to start to say, stop, without making them freaked out.
Yeah. Yeah.
To say, you're not going to the bathroom alone, or I'm going first, I've got to figure it out. Or
yeah, that's scary.
Just awareness, like, and trying not to make it a scary thing, but make it around awareness and, without making it scary, but.
Well, yeah. I think the reality needs to be said too, because a lot of people, they, like you've already mocked it too, which is easy to do, right? Says, I just love to travel, you know, and I want to go here. And all they do maybe is see the blogs or the ease of it and what it's really like. And they joke about how it's, you know, an adventure to be had, right? And those words get lost really about what you're really doing. I mean, the sickness itself, right? I mean, just dealing with the different foods, where you're going. I mean, your whole microbiome has to change, and then it has to change again in another place. I mean, did you struggle with your biology trying to catch up with how you were eating, or did you just eat what was local? How did you kind of cover the food spectrum? How did that work out? I mean, I know you said you got sick a few times, but.
Well, I really only feel normal now. It's been a year. It's taken me about a year. I was quite sick when I got back. And then besides, the dengue fever took a toll on, you know, I lost half of my hair, which happened after I saw you in March.
Holy shit. But you just blow through that shit, right? Besides the mosquito borne pathogen that almost wiped me out.
Yeah. Two weeks after I talked to you in that March. So that April, we were in Madagascar and my hair was falling out. And I mean, handfuls, not like a little one, or you know, a little bit here and there. So we finally figured out it was from the dengue fever. But yeah, I got sick. I mean, it took me about a year to get back to normal, but I ate whatever, you know. I tried to I was primarily plant-based, which made it a little bit more challenging, but
maybe safer though too along the way.
I don't know, you know, people okay. say you mostly get sick from the fruits and maybe from the vegetables. I have to tell you, when I started eating eggs, because I wasn't getting enough food because I was running, I was training, I think I figured out after a few months, I was just eating my eggs too runny and I was getting sick all the time. So even in really nice places.
Gosh, that's so dangerous.
Oh, and I do it all the time. And now I know I can't do that. I just stopped eating eggs completely and I stopped getting sick. I probably had salmonella a couple of times, which is what it was more than anything.
Yeah, too many Rocky movies. You were cracking them and then downing them and going for a run through somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
And I mean, they were cooked, but they're like seriously sunny side up. I love them runny. And it was just a bad idea. So lesson learned. You know, but it's such an easy thing to get in every country, right? So I was like, okay, you know, forget being vegan for now. I'm running. I'm training a lot. I don't want to just eat bread, you know, five times a day. And so that was my solution. And then I really did. Once I scaled that back, I was getting more well.
So do you prefer the home, the stationary, now that you're in Aspen, you're starting to now suburbanize. As that begins to happen, I'm sure you have your adventures and you're out, but would you take life on the road like you did for two straight years as a continuum? Or if you had to choose, or stationary in a place, knowing the neighbor, not going anywhere?
Okay, first I'm in Boulder, not Aspen. But
I said Aspen?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I have to tell you, that's a tough question. I am not what I call, I'm domestically dysfunctional and disinterested. Just a bit. It's not my passion. I love to travel. Do I want to do around the world continuous again anytime soon? Not really, but I would go somewhere else for an extended period of time soon. This is working right now, but it's only working because I have trips that are planned in. You know, I don't know if you know, I lead wellness adventures. I still do my kite surfing, paddleboard, yoga, and yoga retreats. So I break up.
Which will be on soon.
Yeah. So
kitesurfing is so new. That's my new thing. I'm just watching it. I was talking about it. And then like you pulled up on Instagram, like doing the thing. And I'm like, you know, I didn't know she actually did that. And I'm like, I'm thinking about wanting to try it, get into it. The other surfing I can do, but I don't know. There's something about doing that that I want to try.
I think that was the inspiration as well as that guy that was doing that in front of you at the, what was it? New Smyrna?
Yeah, it was New Smyrna.
New Smyrna. Yeah. It's great. And I love it. And so I've got trips. I have two trips coming up, one in December, one in March. So those keep me, it's funny. Those are like the anchors. You know, you think of it the opposite way. People think of their home as the anchor. Mm-hmm. My planned trips and adventures are my anchor to sanity. So, but yeah, I have got a long history in Boulder. So I do feel a sense of place here and connection. And I do love the mountains, but yeah, I'm going to California actually next week, and I'm going to serve. I'm going to support the Napa fires. A really good friend of mine is there, and I'm going through a very difficult time. Her brother is dying and ill. Mm. And so he's been ill for a long time. And so I had already planned to go out and see her to support her. And now the fires are happening. And I was supposed to be, I think I told you, I was supposed to be in Florida for my board meetings for my nonprofit exactly when Irma hit Naples. I was supposed to be there. And so I never went. I had 6 days of lots and lots of meetings. And then I went back and forth. Should I have gone? That's my community. My nonprofit is still there. I should have gone and served. But I really was getting the message like, we're good. We don't need anybody more down here. There was a lot of good resources happening. But with California, I'm not going to let that one pass now. I was supposed to be there, and now I'm still being called to go.
Yes. So it's some, we were talking about it last night. You know, I've experienced a lot of things in my life, from bullets whizzing by my head and card totals and some other movie stuff. But I'd never, you know, I've never been like a house fire, right, or a car fire, right? I've driven by them, right? You live in Florida long enough, you drive by big brush fires. But just hearing some fire guys and firefighters and men and women talking about how scary it actually is when the wall of fire, how it can sneak around you. You can be on one side and then the wind blows, something else sparks, you're trapped by it, you know? I mean, my brother's actually out in Anaheim, so it's not quite affecting him directly. They've canceled a few of his football practices, et cetera, but I mean, that kind of heat fighting something like that, and you know, a lot of love out to those that are trying to save people's homes.
Yeah, I've never experienced anything like that either. Just the drive-bys where they're just close and you just are running from it, but never like directly.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Well, did you see that did you see as you ran really around the world, right? I mean, especially if you watch the news today, right? It's hurricane, earthquake, fires, war, bombs, right? As outside of the media that's pushing the entertainment that we call, news, really, it captures our attention, so we watch. But as you ran around the world, did you feel almost like your global takeaway from each place? Is, are we uniting? Is it more divided? Is it really that bad out there, right, as it's perceived on media, et cetera? Kind of your 2-year step back of going, are we going up? Are we going down?
That's a great question. In general, I feel like the world is safer than what our media portrays, and people are kinder, more generous, more curious, and relatable than what the US media portrays. I can't even tell you how many countries I've been to in the last 2 years, maybe 36. I have it written down. I just don't have it off the top of my head. Probably 36, maybe 37, at least, maybe closer to 40, actually, just in the last 2 years. What's worse, and I'm just not going to sugarcoat this, is the overconsumption and use of plastic and disposables, everything from paper, specifically plastic, to crap, shit that we don't need. And it's heartbreaking because even in Fiji, which is actually some of my best runs there, really beautiful place there. And I felt really, really safe finally the dogs, after, you know, 2 weeks of being there, the dogs made friends with me and they stopped chasing me, and we became buddies. But they were a little harrowing, those little guys. Plastic just showing up, and because it's easy and it's quick. And so it's heartbreaking to seeing these more remote cultures and villages and settlements adopting the easy way of, you know, the Coca-Cola, the bottles, water bottles. Oh my God, it drives me mad. So even just in Europe, I mean, I think that I have this idea that the US is worse, like we're the worst offenders, and we are pretty bad when it comes to consumption, and compared to, say, like Nepal, even India. Yeah, they have more people, but we're consuming a lot more resources.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's Europe too. I mean, they've got a lot that they need to do. I mean, I was in Greece this summer and there was like so much trash and so much crap and so much mindless, you know, consumption and partying and drinking. And part of me is like, oh my God, it's just, I don't ever go on vacation, ever. Like, I'm always in observation. And when I say vacation, I mean like vacate, you know, consciousness. Yeah. I'm always just aware of like, what can I do to make this place better? You know, when I do my retreats, when I lead my expeditions, you know, with my Wealth at Girls nonprofit, with my company, or even with friends, I'm always like, hey, what can we do to contribute to make this a better place? Whether it's, you know, bringing our own water bottles and not buying takeaway, you know, stuff, even on that small level. We just sailed through the Greek islands, and that was amazing because I felt like it was a more eco-conscious way to go through, you know, that culture.
What countries are you seeing most of that change, right? You hear a lot of things coming out of Denmark, Sweden, et cetera, right? Turning biodegradable everything, no more waste or trash. And I think it's interesting you do point out that, you know, you're running out in nature, you're seeing all that, and the takeaway from that, I maybe would have put trash at the bottom of the list as something to expect, you know, as far as anything else. But the impact that has, I've only been a few places, but I'll never forget being in Dangriga, Belize, and seeing probably a 3-4-story mountain of trash just, and it became the centerpiece to the town, of which like the roads were on. And I can't unsee that, you know, and that's what you notice, right? Sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. In a lot of places, yeah, you see that, then you see burning, and then, you know, that's a challenge. It's like, okay, well, at least they're burning. It's not piling up, but then the air quality is real crap. So, you know, my challenge is running places. Also exhaust and just like cars. I mean, Vietnam was crazy. I mean, I for real, like, that's the only place that I ran that I'm legitimately lucky to be alive and not having been hit by motor scooters and cars, because pedestrians are last on the list. They do not have right of way ever. In fact, I think I was it took me a couple of days to realize I was intentionally almost mowed down by once a truck and another time a motorcycle. And when I came back from the run, I said to the little boutique hotel we were staying at, they're Vietnamese owners, but one of them actually is from the U.S. But he went back to Vietnam and started, he was raised in the U.S. and came back to Vietnam with his wife. And so it was great because we really learned a lot about Vietnam through him, because he's Vietnamese, but he had an American upbringing. And so I was like, holy, I didn't want to be offensive, but I was like, okay, what the hell is happening here? These people are trying to kill me. He's like, well, actually, yes, quite possibly. He's like, don't run on the road anymore. But to me, it was like safer because the side of the road, the shoulder was like uneven and I didn't want to hurt my ankle. I didn't want to twist. But I was like, oh, I'm like legit not going to survive if I actually run on the side of the road. Like,
no bike lane.
Yeah. And that was the only place my daughters and I left. The air quality is horrible. Like, I legitimately wore a mask because of, what was that? Oh, I was getting close to the marathon. I was like, oh my God, I don't want to get bronchitis. I have asthma. And yeah, the air quality is terrible. So some of that is really hard. Some of the places are really getting it right. Like Bhutan, it's a carbon negative country. It's not carbon neutral, carbon negative. Like, that's amazing. And it's one of the smallest countries in the world. And they're, they're eating up carbon. They're planting trees. South Korea has also done a great job with reforestation. So there's hope. I have to have hope. I have a little bit of ecological grief. So when you ask me when I'm running the world and I'm looking at all this stuff, I have a hard time where it used to be like, oh, I want to be safe in my person because I don't want to be assaulted again. Now I'm like, oh, I take it to like, stop fucking with Mother Earth. But I'm no longer a victim. I want to be part of the solution. So I'm super connected to, you know, brands that are talking about this stuff, nonprofits that are actually making a difference, talking to people. I talked to a lot of nonprofits while I traveled. So I created a lot of hope for myself, you know, so there's great nonprofits everywhere I went, even in Madagascar doing some great work. This woman, she is from Canada, actually a brilliant woman. And she is starting a great nonprofit in Madagascar. So I feel like the hope lies in these grassroots movements, and it's happening.
Well, that's creating your own experience, you know, is going out there, seeing it. And then, well, we were talking in the beginning, right? The people asking about, I want to find my passion, purpose, right? You went out, created experiences, and in those experiences, your purpose for the moment, if you will, hit you in the face, right? You found something that made you enthusiastic. You got more competent about it, had more experience. I mean, that's where it's birthed, is in creating those. And you certainly have been creating experiences.
Yeah. I went, and you know what, going back, I just think I would love your support in this, and just creating this conversation is really inspiring people to travel and live through this, like a source, this inner source or the intuition, right? It's like resourcing from your source. And when I say that, I mean like getting that download, like what does this place really feel like? And I don't want to diss a place, because in every single country, there's the best and the worst of everyone and everything. We know this, you know, we know that cultural genocide has happened. We know that women have been subjugated. We know that men have, you know, been bred for war, like everywhere. You could look at the good and the bad everywhere. But for you personally, a person to tap into like their deep connection to a place. And that's what I love. And that's what I've really become good at. And I think doing something like running, or say being in flow, whatever it is that gets you in flow. For me, it might be running. For you, it might be surfing. Also, it is for me with kite surfing. I'm completely in flow when I'm kite surfing. And I'll get like, I'll just kind of like download this feeling, this experience of a place. And I'll know if I want to go back there. Vietnam, great kite surfing, no interest in going back. And I don't want to say anything bad about it. It's just, it didn't resonate with me. Perhaps it was because people were trying to mow me down when I was running. Perhaps there were a few other things. It was intense, like, and it was the only place my daughters, and this is just a funny story, but it'll give you a sense of the chaos. My daughters and I had a really long day doing homeschool. So we'd stayed in this really nice hotel, which is ultimately what we had to do a lot to get their schoolwork done, is just to stay in this like badass 5-star hotels that cost a shitload just for the Wi-Fi. Cause we couldn't, you know, get good Wi-Fi anywhere, you know? And even in amazing developed countries like New Zealand, if you were going to a coffee shop, you were literally paying every 30 minutes to get another code for the Wi-Fi. So you're paying, and it's awkward in the Wi-Fi. But anyway, so we'd stay at these hotels. So we're in Vietnam, Saigon, and I said to the girls, there's a beautiful park right up there. I saw it when we were driving in. We're going to do 3 hours of schoolwork, and then we're going to walk to that awesome park. You know, like I'll get a good workout in, you guys will play, it'll be really fun. So that happens. We walk up the road. It's like a 3-minute walk, and we're waiting at this crosswalk that appeared to be a crosswalk, and we're waiting and waiting. I'm like, am I being punked right now? Like no cars would stop. I mean, it wasn't even cars. You know what it was? Scooters, hundreds. And it was like 6 lanes in one direction to cross that way, and then a median, and then cross another 6 lanes of just mass wall of scooters, right? And I'm like, well, at some point that this has to stop, right? And I'm looking and looking. We waited for 15 minutes. I'm like, how do people cross this? Like the park is right there. Like, I can't believe we can't get there. So finally I'm like, nobody's like coming up and offering any advice. And we're just standing there. And the girls are like, mommy, are we going to go? And like, I don't know. This is not safe.
Yeah. So I played Frogger too much. No way.
No. And I finally look at this dude, this local, and he literally is cross. This is how you cross. You walk, scooters are just going by. And then you walk again, scooters are going by. And then it took him like a good 3 to 5 minutes just to cross the first. I was like, oh yeah, hell no, this is not happening. And the girls were like, what? I'm like, sorry, nobody's going to stop for you. And that was Vietnam. Like, nobody's going to stop for you. It's a very interesting place. And not that we met some good people, but we actually met a guy there that's just stayed with us a month ago. Really cool guy. He's become a friend. He's become actually we've seen him twice now since then. But in general, I get a download. And I really encourage people to follow that feeling place when they travel or when they get that intuition about a partnership or a job or a new relationship.
Yeah, to walk us out, actually, that's a good connection to the last question, unless you have some, Patricia. How do you, for you personally, walk the balance of understanding the humility of knowing what we don't know, but also the confidence in self, right? To trust the intuition, as you speak about trust, right? Trust our thought or trust our belief, et cetera. How do you walk that line?
It's a great question. So I didn't tell you this, but I was when I got back last year, I was in a PhD program. And this is sort of like a great humility story, because I always thought I was going to get my PhD, and then I started my business and I was like, well, this is my PhD, learning how to run this business for 7 years and being in action and starting a nonprofit. But I still felt like, wow, I could really do more on a global level if I have this doctorate. I could teach at universities all around the world, and it was in sustainability education and leadership. So really creating action for the environmental movement and the eco-sustainability that we need in a systems approach. But what I realized is, wow, I know so much less, which is great and intimidating. But what's really changed for me in the last year with Donald Trump become president, and this is just real for me, is we are so opinion-based. And the way he speaks is a real aversion to me, and it's put my own self in line, in check, where I don't just speak from opinion as truth anymore as much. We can all own our own experience, but when we start to speak our opinion as truth, I think we're in dangerous waters and dangerous times. And that's something that he does a lot. Like, he doesn't know what he doesn't know, and he's not humble to that. And a lot of places where we're going, it's just people's opinions. It could be, oh, climate change isn't real. It could be that's an opinion. It could be whatever. Think of another big ticket item that is out there in the media today. So I just think that we have to speak from our own experience, be open to other people's experiences, and connect from there, and have a true ability, a true willingness, and a curiosity, a genuine curiosity to learn.
Yeah. Oh, man, look at me. I'm the idiot with the phone on.
Through other people's lenses as well. And that's from a cultural place and from a personal place.
Well, I agree. I think people, they forget they want the respect to be able to say, hey, this is my opinion, I'm allowed to have it. But in the same turn, aren't able to then understand that, well, then so can someone else. Someone else is also allowed the same freedom that you're allowed to express what your belief is, but what you're living. You know what I mean?
It's having global awareness and global perspective. And yes, traveling the world will give you that sense of humility and that awareness that we know so much less than we think we do. And yet not.
I think that you've really shown, though, how much respect you give to each country that you visit. Like, that's the vibe that I get from her. Just every time that you've spoken about where you've been, you're talking about the culture, not about like what beautiful sight you have to go see. You know, you're actually wanting to experience the way that they actually live.
Yes, I appreciate that. observation, and that is true. And it's not to, I just think that we all have different places that we resonate in, and some people, and just trusting that and knowing that, and then following the passion. And it could be, it's where you, in following that passion of where you light up, is where we're going to most be of service, and where we're going to shine, and where we're going to have longevity in that shine.
Yeah. You know, there's one more thing that actually came to mind before I let you go, Jill, is what I've gotten the most emails about 66 episode is, well, when you can hear it, is in the beginning when you talked about selfishness, and you had a certain approach to that selfishness where people were telling you that you were selfish in the beginning, et cetera. And your response to that was rather of a cognitive rampage, and it comes out chopped up sometimes, but it's the most comments or emails I've gotten about that email, right? And from that interview, I remember a lot about how you sort of answered it. And it's something I reference, right? We all have like our card catalog where, you know what, this lady, Jill Wheeler in 66, yeah. You know, when I start feeling like I'm being selfish, right? When I start having that self-guilt attack of going like, oh, I can't be selfish, or that's selfish, or even accusing others of being selfish, just for old time's sake, if you would, and maybe for new time, link that same idea before you left, when you did change everything, when everyone told you were being selfish, and now after traveling the world, being through all that, and what's the definition still, and how does someone approach that if they're being told they're being selfish? What's the look on that?
Well, I think that's so interesting, because I always, and I don't know if I referenced it then, as I called it selfist, right? Did I talk about that? That S-E-L-F-I-S-T, selfist. And it takes that stigma off of being selfish. And it's so funny, because I was just at this women's leadership conference last weekend called Emerging Women. And one of the women, I've never, ever, ever in 15, 20 years heard anybody use that word selfist. And her whole talk was about selfistry, the process of selfistry, and how you really have, she was an escort. Her talk was from being an escort to a monk to like a leadership, to a leadership coach or something, where she talks about the journey of selfistry and how really in order to be part of the we, and I do believe that it's a continuum too, or it's actually a circle. It's self-fulfilling, or it's a cycle. You know, we have to be connected to our self in a way that's true. We talked about the passion and that longevity in order to become a part of the we. So I really feel like for me, I stepped away from my practice, and I left a lot of my clients in order to contribute to my family. And I had to overcome probably mostly my own judgment about leaving my career and leaving my clients and starting over again. But I'm coming from a much calmer place, a much more present place, because I've fulfilled the personal and family needs now. I actually sleep better. I perform better. I connect better with my clients, because it's not a us or a them, meaning it's not like me and my family versus what my clients need. It's actually a cycle. It's in balance.
Yeah.
So we have to be connected to the self and fulfilled, or we're completely depleting, and the we isn't getting the full I, the full part of you.
The family is only as strong as the weakest and most unhealthy link.
Right. And so that goes into your, into the life work as well, the career work. So I'm just launching back into my full career again as a therapist and transformational leadership coach. So it's,
well, where can everybody find everything? You know, the outs, right? Tag it all. Where do they find you? How do they get you as or become your client, et cetera?
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm in love with my trips. With my journeys are the best. Where I'm really excited about supporting others, people who want to get into the retreat business. I'm doing consultations for people who want to transform their personal or private practice into more of a retreat type setting. Immersion's my specialty. Can you tell? That's why I do these huge expeditions and these long journeys. I believe And so if I'm a therapist and I see someone, you know, for 3 months, for 1 hour a week, that's 12 hours, or you can go on retreat with me for 6 days and you've got me for, 80 hours. That's a really good deal.
Well, too, think about how many women waste, or even men for that matter, waste money on things that they're trying to go and find exactly what you're going to provide for them. But it's not that one-on-one experience, you know?
I like to kick in your front door. Why go once a week for 8 months when I can, I'm a preference, you know, the change can happen like this. It doesn't have to be this drawn out process.
I agree. Transformation can happen in a moment. It's a choice. So I lead trips. I've got Baja coming up December 7th through the 12th. I've got Baja again, which is paddleboarding, paddleboard yoga, swimming with whale sharks, which is the most amazing thing in the world. Swimming with wild, and of course they're all wild, all completely wild. Sea lions, very remote, beautiful part of Baja. That's also in March. And then I do custom trips to Peru, the Philippines, Greece, Baja, Costa Rica, everything like that. Find me at WellFit Institute on Facebook, WellFit Jill Twitter, and Instagram. My website is WellFit Institute or Jill Wheeler. They both link. And I just started a private group called WellFit Wednesday. And that is an extension of the work I used to do with women. And it's mainly for women. And I'm considering doing a men's group if you think that I should do that.
Yeah, I think the crossover is good. I think the Boy Scouts have even crossed over now. So I think you can pretty much do groups of anybody.
Yeah. I love it. So that's what I'm up to. And online coaching and counseling is also a big part of my practice.
That's the future. That's where it's at. I'll just stick to being the podcast counselor. That way, hope I can't get sued, but I can just run my mouth and I don't have to get paneled by any insurance company. No, I can just keep talking, or I just keep interviewing people that are doing that kind of thing and try to help out that way.
You're doing amazing. I love this. I love what you're doing. I love your book. I'm welcome. I'm super happy for you too as well.
You're actually just as amazing as he described. A lot of times just, it's like he was saying earlier, one of those names that comes up where he's like, oh, you got to meet Jill. And I'm like, who's this Jill?
Yeah, Patricia's going through it. She's toughing it out. We were playing, let's just call it extreme frisbee. That's one of the things. We'll take the dogs out and just go play.
And we did that too.
Well, we it's fun. I love getting away and doing it. And she goes basically horizontal in the air,
yeah,
like it's the Super Bowl, and goes out for a catch. It really could have let it go. makes a heck of a jump, goes horizontal, tucks her shoulder, and basically fractured her collarbone. And this was Sunday, so this was just 4 days ago. So it's all swollen up there. And
oh my gosh.
She's supposed to wear the arm sling thing, but she's not doing it. But So
I've been a little bit out of it in pain.
Yeah, the pain's getting her, and you know, there's no pain pills going around. Cognitive rampage. So let's just say we've had more organic, holistic approaches to dealing with the pain.
Well, too bad you're not in Boulder, because we do have some natural, lots of. There's a great herbal apothecary here too that does really great pain rubs as well.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah, the weather's good for it down here. And unfortunately, they just haven't come around to legislation yet, man. Hopefully they'll eventually do that and wise up.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you'll have to come out, Patricia, and visit. We actually, and something we play on our retreats, one of my partners and I, we talk about extreme frisbee all the time. It's so fun. I can't believe you guys.
I'll just love playing with me then.
you know she'll give it her all.
Well, yeah, I did that too. And I was going for one a couple months ago, and this out of the blue, this dog came out of nowhere.
What's the
guy checked me while I was in the air. I was like, ah, and I was so hard. I'm shocked I didn't break something.
She's the dog whisperer.
What is up with you and the dogs attacking you, Jill?
Well, he was going for the frisbee.
And oh, okay. I thought maybe he was going for you. And then
we didn't know. He wasn't our dog. He wasn't with us. He's just like the most extreme Frisbee playing dog ever. And he came out of nowhere. We laughed about it, but in the moment it was like, oh my God, what just happened?
Yeah. Because that's what, when you get injured like that for a minute and something's broken or fractured, you know, you're kind of like, all right, how bad is it? Do I have all my parts? Can I move?
Well, I hope you feel better.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a little bit out of it, but I do appreciate it. I was wanting so badly to meet you, but I knew I just didn't have that time.
Yeah, I was like, come on, you'll make it. And, you know, uncomfortable is where the change is, you know. And she's on there like, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's one of our taglines.
You know it. Jill, I appreciate you coming on and sharing.
I am just so inspired by you as always. So thank you so much.
Anytime you got something new, yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
We're out.
I think, I had to help you at the end. I knew you were struggling with the pain. We're still alive.
I
knew you were struggling.
I was trying to hide it, but I was just like, aww. I know, but... I don't take anything. It's just going to go away.
Yeah.
Gotta go put my sling back on.
Yeah. Well, let's not be live anymore. But I told you, she's fun to talk to, right?
Yeah, she's awesome. I could see it in her eyes when she would talk, and just you could totally feel it.
Yeah, she talked about her childhood, I think, a little bit on the first podcast, and just kind of defiantly will be joyful. You know what I mean? Like, I have to do this. Well, you saw it, but I have to go. So, I mean, yeah. I don't know what you got to do, but I'm going.
Like, you guys can go to these two places or this one, but I'm going this place.
And the change that, you know, not just observing, right, but then coming back and going, look, we got to do something now, right? That's our famous line. Right?
Yeah, we did something.
Yeah. All right. And it's inspiring too. And that's why I wanted to hang out. And actually, it was great to finally hear this time without interruptions of technology.
Skype jacking it up last time.
Yeah, well, it was just a bad connection. She was in Kathmandu last time. Literally, when people are like, oh, what are you in Kathmandu? She's like, yeah, yeah. Actually, I fucking am.
Right.
Yeah, but it's that's what I'm saying, man. The traveling around the world, man, it has this romantic push on it about what you do, right? And when you really hear, right, or when you really do the traveling, and you're like, what the fuck? Because when you went to New Zealand, you were like 10, and I'm done. I'm ready to go home.
I mean, it was beautiful. I got to experience it, especially it was for a wedding, so it wasn't like I had to really pay for that part, you know? So it was a great experience on that side where I could actually enjoy myself, but... by day six, I was like, I want to go back home.
Back to my own bed.
Yeah.
Yes. It is. Well, when you travel, you'll learn. You know, we've driven across the country, you and I, and got to experience that. That's something, I guess, you know, I think you tell any relationship that, right? If you want to see if you can get along, just get in the car with only a few things and a dog or two and take off. And let's see how long it lasts.
I think that's probably one thing that actually helps it when there's something else that you have to like take care of together.
Oh, thanks.
Well, it's a distraction.
Whatever keeps the attention away from you.
Well, you know, when you start counting those lines on the road, you're like, you get the dog, you know, it's not, it's no longer about boredom or just about excitement or whatever. Cause I'm talking about the times when we came back when we were, you know, worried about the weather.
Yeah. The driving through the weather is terrible. That's nerve wracking, but you know, I think if you feel like if somebody, you know, is out there and you want to travel or whatever, you know, I guess you go to that place, go experience it, because the short-term pain of the experience of travel, as long as you're not kidnapped or taken away, because that shit happens. People are like, that's just the movies. It's not real. I'm like, yeah, it fucking happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the safety issues. If you do, at least you know short-term pain. You either know, like she knew, hey, short-term pain, I've been to Vietnam. Not going back. But I know, right, the short-term pain, right. Not that it's that much pain, not ever going to a place. But, you know, having that experience, creating the experience, because then at least you know. At least you know, and you don't look back and go, hey, you know, I could have been, I should have been, or I would have done.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. I'm not one of those that says, I wish I wouldn't have done that.
Except this podcast right now is your shoulders in complete pain.
I know. I feel like serious, like there's a,
well, you toughed it out. So I appreciate you sitting with us, and just everybody know, I am here. So if I come up missing tomorrow, she did it because I injured her for making her sit on the podcast. So I'm just getting my, witnesses. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Probably not anymore.
All right. Well, appreciate y'all listening. And actually, I have a serious Adam's Rampage coming up. The notes are full. I'm going to enjoy this weekend. So off the social media as much as I can. The spring's on Sunday. Yeah. Get to hang out with my daughter. Get to hang out with some sun. Get some sun with my daughter, some of my friends. And
the dogs.
Yeah, the dogs too. All right. And shout out to my boy Juan's little daughter. We'll be at his birthday Saturday. Get to hang out there. But it's good to be back home, and glad you could come with me and meet my friends and my home and my place.
I love it. I love it every time I get to meet somebody new.
That's got to be back. But watch this, radio guy. Remember, October 21st, I will be in Windermere, Florida. No, that's so terrible. That fucking host guy, man. But yeah, seriously, though, October 21st, I have the workshop. It's 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. here in Windermere. Actually, the address has been put up there. And if you can't afford the ticket, just tell me. Just shoot a little email. Hey, you know, just a little difficult right now. I don't want money to be a reason you can't come learn some things. If you're, look, it's not a miracle pill. You're not going to show up and I go, here, these three steps, you'll be rich and mentally healthy. But if you're really looking for a knowledge in a different way and to make a change, just hit me the email. Say, hey, I really want to come, but I can't afford the ticket. And don't worry about it. Well, you just walk through they'll take care of you at the door. You'll probably see Patricia's face at the door. I don't want that to hold anybody back at all from change. So there's probably a little bit of opening. I don't know how many people I actually watch. I'll get like 100 people and be like, hey, I can't afford it and come. And then no one fits. We'll stuff everybody in the room. But that is October 21st. Go to adamlowry.com. You can buy the tickets there. If you're a member of the Tribe of Change on Facebook, there's a password. It's posted on there, but if you can't find it, just hit me up. I'll give you the password and you get $50 off the ticket price. Or if you bought a book as well, if you're not a member of the Tribe of Change and you come to the event and you purchased a book, it's also 50 off. And if you can't afford it, come anyway.
Knock on the door. We'll let you in.
Yeah, not come anyway. Come learn something. You know, bring somebody even. I mean, split a ticket, right? I mean, split a ticket with somebody. Put plus one. Or if you can't, simply message or email. Just say, hey, I can't right now, because $100 can go a long way in certain people's families and lives, man. I know it's hard out there. So especially if you're in a transition, right? If you're dealing with shit, you're in the middle of addiction, depression, like fuck, $100, that may mean something.
A lot.
Right. That's a lot. So don't let that hold you back. Right. So for all those emails that I got that said, I'd love to go, but my money's strapped. Well, I'll see you October 21st. Yeah. Again, the books on Amazon. You'll hear that in the intro when we post this podcast. I don't think do I have anything else I'm supposed to say?
Nothing else.
All right. Well, I can hear Steve in the background going, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Oh, subscribe on YouTube and be notified when we go live, and become a Tribe of Change member by submitting your email address on the website at adamlowry.com, L-O-W-E-R-Y, and become a Tribe of Change member and have discounts to the store of shit we don't sell. No, yeah, we don't sell anything, so no need to go to the website and buy shit.
That wasn't the radio voice that you introduced me to.
No, it wasn't. But y'all, weekend time, get sun, get outside, and love you.